and welcome to Taste of True Crime Podcast. I'm Abby.
I'm Sam.
And we are actually recording our first episode, and we are really excited, just in time for Apple Podcast to finally approve us. And I want to go over a few things real quick before we get started. This is more of a laid back discussion, conversational type of podcast. We do actually do our research, so nothing that we are telling you is made
false.
So there will be some casual discussion. It's not going to be like your Forensic Files and any of that stuff. We also apologize if we pronounce something wrong or say something incorrectly. That will happen, and you can laugh at us. That is okay. So, but if you do have any desire, you can email us with our corrections on anything that we may have mispronounced. Thank you. Mispronounced. Or, you know, said incorrectly. We also joke around a lot. It's in both of our natures. We can't help it. By no means is that, you know, I don't want y'all to mistake that for us laughing at the victims, downplaying the crime, or anything like that. You know, we would never do anything like that. But we do joke around a lot, play around a lot.
Opinionated a lot.
Very. Are you talking about me?
Maybe a little bit.
Like, just a little bit. I feel like that was directed.
Just a little bit.
Okay, so we decided for our first episode that... You're laughing because I'm about to kill this, okay? We decided that we are going to cover the Clear Lake murders. And let me just tell you, for about a week now, we've been going back and forth on how we are going to pronounce the murderer's name. Well, one of the murderer's names. Christine Paolilla. I did it. And Christopher Snyder. Those are the two murderers and our victims. Rachel Coloradus, Tiffany Rao, Marcus Priscilla, and Aldebert Sanchez, who we will probably call D throughout this thing because that's just a tongue twister to me.
We have a lot of names.
Yeah.
A lot of difficult names.
Today, I even called Sam randomly. We work together, by the way, if you didn't listen to our introductory. We work together. Our offices are literally right across the hall. I called her, and I was just like, Paolilla. Like, that's it. That's what it is. So I hear her go, hold on. I hear her pull out her notepad and a pen, and she's like, Paola, yep.
And I will still pronounce it wrong.
Probably.
Just to clarify.
So we do want to start off, you know, kind of going over a little bit of background information on all of them. Most importantly, the victims to me. I feel like in a lot of these cases, the, you know, murderers and...
The murderers.
Yeah, in this case, get, you know, talked about the most. Like, you don't hear a lot about the victims, and that rubs me the wrong way because I'm like, you're, you know...
The bad guy.
I'm going to say, how do you say boosting these people? I don't want to say that.
Boosting their...
I don't know. Anyway.
You get where we're going.
You know, we don't want to just focus all on the murderers. We want to make sure that we do talk about the victims themselves because they were people, you know, had family, loved ones who cared about them. We don't want to just have our primary focus be on the horrendous acts that these people, you know, committed. So I'm going to let Sam go ahead. Don't give me that face. It's your turn. Your turn.
Who do we want to start with?
I know it's normally my turn, but it's your turn.
It's always your turn. When you drive, it's always your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Even if the car's coming at us.
Yeah, that's okay.
But that's besides the point. Okay, so we have... Do we want to start with the murderers?
Let's start with the victims.
The victims. Okay, so we're going to start with Rachel. Rachel... Abigail, help me.
Coloradus.
That's not that hard. Mm-mm. Rachel Coloradus. Born November 20th, 1984 to parents George and Ann. She had a brother and two sisters. Graduated from high school in 2003. Unfortunately, it was 2 months before she was killed. She had worked at the UPS store, Denny's, Randall's. She babysit the neighborhood kids. She led the youth drama ministry at Clear Creek Community Church. She was also a youth counselor with the summer camps and vacation Bible school. She did, after she graduated, she and Tiffany both began bartending at an adult club, Club Exotica. Mm-hmm. Club Exotica there in Houston. They were both too shy to dance, but they did, you know, they bartended there. She also moved in with Tiffany 2 weeks before the killings, possibly one of her worst mistakes, but she had plans to join the military, and unfortunately that didn't work out for her. We have Tiffany Rowles. Mm-hmm. Wow, I almost was close. I was close. So close. I was so close.
I'm trying to make it more than one person. That's okay.
She was actually adopted by Sally and Chester after her real mother had passed away from cancer when she was fairly young. She also lost her adopted mother back in 1998. From cancer. Her father remarried and moved to Manville with his new wife. Tiffany remained at her family home to finish out her senior year of high school.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where, you know, you're a senior in high school. You don't have any parental supervision. Of course, you're going to be the party house. Like, you know, people are going to go and party, drink, whatever.
Absolutely.
No parental supervision. I had a kid when I was a senior in high school, and I still could not imagine that going on with my family. But anyway.
No, absolutely not. She did find somebody. She was dating. It was, Priscilla. His full name is...
Marcus Priscilla.
Thank you. Marcus Priscilla. Everyone around him adored him, thought that they were an extremely happy couple. You didn't see them not smiling together. He was a persistent, you know, party at the house of Rachel and Tiffany's. His cousin had decided to come stay with him for a little bit. And unfortunately, he was,
another victim.
Mm-hmm. He was a little older than them. He was 21. They were all 18. Let's see. Rachel was 18. Tiffany was 18. Marcus was 19. And
Aldebert. 21.
21. Mm-hmm. He was 21. And he had just come to kind of stay with his cousin for a little bit, hang out. And again, unfortunately, he was one of the victims. Let's see. So Marcus was actually, I believe he was in school, correct?
Yes.
He was at San Jack. Mm-hmm. He was attending San Jack. And he was going for, it was automotive.
Mommy, I'm my new friend.
Thank you. School for automotive technology. At the time, he was working as a waiter at Landry Seafood there at the Kima Boardwalk.
And it's so surreal to me because we are in the Houston area, Galveston County area. This is super close to home for both of us. So it's so crazy to me when we were doing our research to see things like the Kima Boardwalk. And
right. That's literally open. 10 miles from
correct.
My house.
And it's such
and
a popular
from
place.
Years maybe.
Like everybody goes there. So busy on the weekend. There's so many things that you can do. So it's like couldn't wrap my head around the fact that it happened so close.
And what kind of baffled me was that, you know, we had started talking about this story when we decided to do this. A coworker of ours had actually realized what strange human beings we were and how much we really dug into this true crime stuff. And he had mentioned to us about a story back in 2003 where, you know, there was four teenagers that were murdered. And he had asked if we had heard about the story. And it kind of blew my mind that 2003 is when I graduated from high school. And I am probably two towns from Clear Lake. And I just don't remember this.
Can we talk about in 2003 that I was in eighth grade?
Can we not?
Okay, go ahead. Continue. I just had to put that out there.
Can we not? And yet I'm still as cool as you are. But whatever. I don't know. Just kind of so close to home and you don't... Like 2003 was a big time for me. And you feel like big times, like you remember big stories. And I just don't remember there being a lot about this. But it just kind of made me want to kind of look more into it. So a little bit off topic there, but, you know, just mentioned that we were so close to the Kima Boardwalk and so close to the story. So that was Marcus, 19-year-old. He was dating Tiffany, going to school, working. You know, he loved working on cars and being with his family as well as Tiffany. Again, his cousin decided to come join him that summer and just kind of hang out. His cousin was Aldebert Sanchez. He was 21. He went by the name, a.k.a. D. His teachers mentioned that he had loved rap music. He also sang along with a local group. He had planned to go to college to study for computer technology, and then this happened.
That's a little bit about the victims, and like I said, I wish that we had more information about the victims, but normally in these cases, it's so much easier to find information about the, you know, actual murderer, etc. And so I guess we'll go ahead and talk about a little bit about Christine and her early life. We'll also talk about Christopher Snyder, who was her boyfriend at the time of the murders. He was actually 21. She was 17 going into her senior year of high school. There's also not very much information on him, which is crazy to me also. And I kind of have a theory behind that, which I'll get into a little bit more as we go on. But we'll go ahead and let Sam talk about
Look Christine. At her throwing stuff in there that I was not aware about with her little I'll go into theory. Later.
Look, I'm like Inspector Gadget in
Look
here,
at
okay?
her. She's like, I'm going to keep this one to myself.
Let me just throw spit this out and there. Surprise you.
I'm going to sound like the smart one. Okay, she is a smart one, but that's besides the point. So boyfriend Chris Snyder, from what people have said about him, he was very pushy and aggressive. His family was actually, they weren't real fond of Christine as well. It seems like it was just kind of a lethal combination between Chris and Christine. Maybe if they had never met each other, they would have went in different directions. Ooh. In this case, they did not, unfortunately. Christine was extremely jealous of other women regarding Chris. Anytime he looked in another direction, she just automatically assumed he was, you know, checking out another chick. And she would get super jealous. She would start, you know, hitting on him. And just, there were times where Chris's parents had actually called the police a few times on her. She was known as the psycho in Chris's household. His sister had actually mentioned that there were a few times where she would actually, after a long night or, you know, a big fight, she would actually stay the night in their front yard. She would, you know, start
Lay
yelling.
Lay in the lawn like an animal.
Exactly.
What she, did.
She would threaten to kill his parents, threaten to kill her, or threaten to kill Chris's sister. She would try to get into the house. She would go to sleep in the front yard and then wake up and start it all over again. Chris had actually told his parents on a few occasions that there were only two things that he was scared of in life, and that was the police and Christine.
And that's very sad. Like, calm down,
Cujo.
Very
sad. Exactly. Like a dog. Exactly. Not a whole lot about him, you know, other than his relationship with Christine. And that, you know, he was very jealous. She did actually kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Where she kind of like instigated it. Mm-hmm. She kind of instigated things with him.
It's like she wanted the attention, the right. drama, the fighting. That's kind of thrive off of it, I
right.
think.
She enjoyed being humiliated is what mm-hmm. it seemed like. Demanded rough sex.
Yeah.
And
to the point where it even made him feel uncomfortable.
Correct. You know, other than that, there's not a whole lot about him until about, 3 years and 1 day to the day of the actual murder. His girlfriend had mentioned that she had last seen him on July 21st, was actually the day after Christine had been arrested for the murders. Chris's girlfriend had mentioned that she had seen him on July 21st when he had left her premises in a white tank top, which we call wife beaters.
Wife beaters down here in Texas.
We definitely call them wife beaters. sorry to admit. and a pair of shorts. And he had walked out into a field of woods with a bottle of prescription medicine that was hers. Cadaver dogs had actually found him on August 5th, so, which was 18 days from the arrest of Christine. So, what was that? 19 days from the day that he had actually walked out there?
Yeah.
And he had apparently taken the bottle of prescription meds and overdosed intentionally.
Because he knew they were coming after him next.
They knew they were coming. They had found him in Greenville, South Carolina, where he had been staying with his girlfriend, whom he had met on the internet. That's, the end of his story.
Was it Tinder or Bumble?
I don't even know if in was 2006, that even around? I don't think in 2006 that was a thing, but you know what? I may have been drinking too much to know. There's that.
Sorry, we're like in the middle of...
We're all dying.
If you've never been to Texas, pretty much, the weather around this time, the way that it changes is absolutely ridiculous.
It's like, drunk weather.
It really is. It's like she last week, Friday, I was here, and it was below...
It was like 40. 30, 39, 40. Mm-hmm. And it was 40.
Freeze. That's cold to us.
Yeah.
Today, it's like 80, so the weather is changing on us. We're coughing up our lungs, so we apologize.
Sorry.
Me more than her. That's why I'm trying to stay quiet.
She's rubbing off on me, as along with everything else, apparently.
Oh, we don't get into that. That's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other topic, for sure.
Okay, so Christine.
Oh, that's right. We forgot about her. Oh, sorry about that.
Not really, but
Not really.
I guess it's kind of important.
Yeah, she was she is the only one left out of all of this. Mm-hmm. She's unfortunately the only one still around.
Still kicking.
She's actually, I think, 33. She's a year younger than me. So, yeah, I'm 34, guys. I'm 34.
Can Abby's you say that
again? Like, for the I'm 34. Of- Abby's like 12.
So we've the people in the back can hear you?
We've established. 34, Samantha. 12-year-old Abby. Got mm-hmm. it. So, Christine. Palalilla. Palalilla. Christine Palalilla.
Yes.
Actually, Christine Marie Palalilla, mm-hmm. but nobody cares. Was born March 31st, 1986. My parents had been married one whole year on that date. Not important.
Kind of is, but you know.
She was, she kind of had a rough life. No excuse. She was 2 years old when her drug-addicted father had actually passed away in a construction accident. Her mother, Lori... She actually began using drugs after that and lost custody of Christine and her brother, John, to Christine's grandparents. Christine was soon actually diagnosed with alopecia.
Yes, and I kind of want to talk about that real quick because I had no idea what that was. So, I went
Some
in.
Of us older folks did because, we have knowledge. Sorry, but whatever.
I'm a spring chicken. I can't help it. So I went and researched it, and alopecia is sudden hair loss. It can occur It occurs when the immune system attacks the hair follicles. It's not something that can be cured, and this was crazy to me because, like I said, I wasn't familiar with it, but 6.8 million people in just the United States are affected by it. So that's kind of, I feel like...
That's...
A large portion of the United States.
You feel like we should know some people but with that, but we don't.
But
I don't think
I
do. And then I feel bad Maybe if I do and I don't.
And now you outed them.
And now I feel terrible.
And now life is never the same.
And I hope they never listen to this.
Anyway.
Because I'm a people pleaser and I like and people to like me.
I'm not.
She's not.
At all.
She could care less.
Zero fucks given.
Doesn't care.
Okay. So that's Christine and her alopecia. Pisha.
Shit. Alopecia.
They're going to hate us.
Yeah, well, what can you do?
Whatever. Okay.
Don't listen. Listen. Please listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
Tell your friends.
Just keep listening.
So.
Basically, the alopecia is a loss of all hair follicles, like Abby said. So, Christine had no eyebrows, no eyelashes, no hair on her head. She wore really thick... Cheap, ugly ugly wigs. She also had really thick glasses due to her poor vision, and she was picked on all the time by other kids. breaks my heart. We both have children. Mm-hmm. Could not imagine other people picking on our children.
First of all, your kid bullies my kid, we're going to have some problems.
Exactly. And it's no excuse for what she did. It's not. No excuse. Especially because these two girls took her in. Her mother actually got help and got sober, and she regained custody of her children. She remarried, and she moved to Clear Lake with the kids. Christine actually then began attending Clear Lake High School, and that's where she met Rachel and Tiffany. They were a year older than her, but after seeing kids, you know, tease her and pick on her, they kind of took her under their wings, befriended her. They helped her pick out, you know, the better wigs, the ones that looked more real.
Like natural.
Natural, yeah. More natural. That's a better word.
Because I think they said that at some point kids were calling her like a clown and all this other stuff.
And literally walking down the hallway and like ripping her wig off.
First.
Like, no, ma'am. Couldn't be me. Like, why? Why? What does that do for anybody?
I don't understand. But nothing. You know how it is in high school.
Children so. I never did.
I don't have a wig to rip off, so I don't know. I mean, but I would have never done that.
I did witness weave getting ripped off and thrown across the hallway, but went to Dickinson High School.
Yeah, but and, you don't think I would.
But you went to Texas
that.
City, like, so you should thing. Know the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's again off topic. So Rachel and Tiffany, like I said, really took her under their wing. not even a year later, the students there, her bodily, what do you call that bodily?
The student body.
There you go. Student body had actually given her the title of Miss Irresistible.
Okay, I'm going to stop her right there because that pisses me off.
I'm sorry.
I mean, not the fact that she was.
My bad.
That she was called Miss Irresistible. It's the fact that, you know, if you Google this, you'll see like.
Titles
of Miss Irresistible, charged with murder, Miss Irresistible. First of all, she was not irresistible when she was killing these people, okay? It's glorifying her, and it just rubs me the wrong way every time, really grinds my gears. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Not a problem. Speak your mind, girl. Always. Speak your mind. You know what really gets to me is that I had read an article that had brought up the fact that Rachel actually, who was one of the murder victims, the one who really, really took Christine under her wing, she actually carried a photo of Christine in her purse at all times. And this photo actually, to sum it down, said, you know, damn, we've had some crazy memories. Mm-hmm. I love you. You know, best friends forever. And Rachel carried this in her purse.
Okay, but now...
And yet, Christine, who gave her this picture, who said, I love you, we'll be friends forever. Mm-hmm.
Shot and killed her in cold blood.
Murdered
her. So, because, like, then I was like, okay, do I need to give Sam a picture of me to carry in her
purse? No, because I don't
want to
murder you.
Because then I was like,
you.
Then the bitch is going to murder me, and it's not even... No.
Mm-hmm. I got babies to raise. I can't be murdering you.
Yeah, and I
you
don't
know?
Need to be murdered, because I got
You got babies. You don't need to be murdered. I just... That, when I read that, that just kind of, like...
Mm-hmm.
Stung me in the heart a little bit. Man, and she, Christine, we haven't got there yet, but Christine really did a toll on Rachel. And that's just...
Yeah. That was just, personal.
It just breaks my heart. I don't have a whole lot more on Christine until we start getting into...
The crime itself.
The day.
Yeah, and so, yeah, we're going to get into the day.
The day.
So, you know, like she said, kept a picture of her in her wallet. Around that time is when Christine met Christopher Snyder. And, you know, earlier Sam stated that in Christopher's life, Christopher's family, she was, you know, considered the psycho.
The psycho.
But in Christine's family and Christine's friends, you know, he was considered the no good drug addict. You know, nobody approved of him. Nobody approved of their relationship. And they knew of his involvement with drugs, his criminal history. So it's kind of funny to me how, you know, like in Chris's family, she's the villain.
Right.
And Christine's family, and he's friends. The villain.
Right.
And it's like, but then you put two villains together and...
What do you get?
A fucking murder.
A fucking
murder. Times four.
Times four.
So let's talk about the day of the murder. And I say day because it happened between, like, what, 3 or 4 in the afternoon?
It was between 3 and 3:30.
Yes, so it was literally during the day. Anybody could have walked by, but, you know, that apparently was not the case. So, on July 18, 2003 is when Marcus, Tiffany, Rachel, and Albert were murdered. I'm going to go into detail a little bit about their injuries. So I guess I'm going to say, like, trigger warning, because some of this is kind of gruesome. So Albert had been shot 6 times in the middle of his forehead, his neck, his left arm, 2 in his torso, and 1 in his shoulder. So, and then Marcus had been shot in the head, stomach, right arm, and right shoulder. Marcus had also been beaten, and there were abrasions in temple, around his temple, and lacerations on the back of his head. And so, let's talk about that, because Marcus and Rachel were the only ones beaten. Rachel had been beaten the worst of all of them. She had several lacerations, abrasions, and blows to her skull, apparently being pistol whipped.
Police called it overkill.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely overkill.
She had been shot in the lower abdomen, 5 shots into her right thigh, 3 in her left shin, and 1 in her right foot. She had also been shot directly in the vagina. And I'm going to tell you right now, that is a clear sign of jealousy. That was personal. You know, that right. She also had a shot to her left butt cheek. And it's like, you get that close, that's very personal. Which kind of confused me when the cops were like, oh, drug deal gone wrong. And then Tiffany had a bullet wound straight through her forehead. She had been shot in the chin, left cheek, left shoulder, left abdomen, and just to the left of her vagina, right leg, right knee, and right shin. So earlier, if you had heard me say that I had kind of a theory about, you know, why Rachel and Tiffany were, you know, talked about more, and Miss Irresistible were talked about more, and it's because I feel like she was threatened by these girls. No matter what they did for her or any way to help her, she was still jealous. And the shot, you know, to the left of Tiffany's vagina and the shot directly in Rachel's vagina, that was just crazy to me. And so I think that's why, you know, Marcus and Albert were kind of just like the, oh, they were there and they were murdered, but they're let's victims, talk but about the these three
side victims.
Correct. And so Rachel had bruises on the back of her left hand, and that was showing the police that she was trying to protect herself. It was even said she managed to call 911 on her cell phone.
Right.
But she was killed before she could complete the call, or Chris...
She was literally gagging on her own blood. Like, and even Christine had told that to the police. Like, she was gagging on her own blood.
Trying to call 911. And I don't know if it was Chris or Christine who realized what she was doing and hung up the phone.
It was Christine.
Christine hung up the phone when she was trying to call 911.
And Rachel was literally asking her, like, why? Over and over and over again. Like, why? Why are you doing this? Why?
Yeah.
They were best friends.
So, there were 2 different caliber weapons used. And all 4 of the victims were positioned in a way that indicated that they didn't feel the shooter or shooters were a threat. Which is another thing, like, a drug deal gone wrong. Like, I feel like if this is a drug deal, you're not going to be lounging on the couch when letting somebody that is buying drugs from you just walk on in and, you know, do their own thing.
You're preparing for the deal.
Correct. And so after the murders, which is, this made me sick, Christine went to her shift at Walgreens at the beauty counter like nothing had even happened.
She literally told Chris,
I
gotta go to work.
So
take me to work.
And another thing that broke my heart, and you don't see this anywhere else. I read this somewhere, and I'll, you know, put the source in the description of the episode. Aldebert and Marcus's family found out about the murders from the news.
On TV.
They saw it on the news, and the grandma pointed at a car and said, "That looks like Marcus's car."
So sad.
So that's how they found out about the murder of her grandson and his cousin. Mm. So, like I said, the police department thought this was a drug deal gone wrong. Phil Yoakum and Tom Ladd were the initial detectives on the case. They received several tips and had a few suspects, but nothing was ever solid. Nothing ever went through. They went through a lot of false information, taking them down, you know, rabbit holes, and it ended up being absolutely nothing. And that was very frustrating for them, definitely. And then the fact that they couldn't even focus on the case, like they really wanted to focus on the case, because they were so short-staffed and had other, you know, murders and things that they had to look into as well. In 2004, Christine had already gone about her business in her senior year. She walked with her class, but she did not actually have enough credits to graduate. So she did that. I don't know for sure if she ever went back and finished getting those credits to actually be a high school graduate.
Doubt it.
Right?
Too busy injecting heroin into her veins.
That's correct.
From
and
literally, you know.
Snorting cocaine. You know, no
big
deal.
Before this even happened.
Yeah.
Cocaine, heroin. It's the way to go.
So, apparently. About another thing before I get into Christine and her husband, Justin Rott. Christine was to come into a large inheritance when she turned 18. And when I say large, I mean
$350,000. $360,000, to be exact.
Oh, snap.
$10,000 more than that.
$360,000. And I'm like, why are you out here killing people when you know you're about to come into this
inherit that much money at 18?
Yeah.
Can I have some?
No, she spent it all on drugs.
And now at 34, like, that'd be great.
None for you. So.
Apparently not.
When she met her husband, Justin Rott, they met at a 12-step meeting, you know, because that's a good thing.
That's where you should begin your
she
marriage.
She was known to have a strong need to fix people. And it didn't take long before they were married in March of 2005. They had been only married a few weeks when Christine saw the sketches that had been released on the news of her and Chris, and she panicked, asking him if the sketch looked like her.
Which it did not.
Not at all.
Not at all.
No reason.
Chris, yes.
It looked like Chris, but
Christine,
Chris, I don't
anybody.
Even think Chris knew that those sketches were even out.
It looked like there was a do-rag on her head. Like,
yeah.
You can't tell what a girl looks like without
with
hair.
With a do-rag.
You know, like, or with a do-rag. You're right. Correction.
So, apparently, she panicked. She did confide in her husband, told him about the murders. He says that he didn't know what to do.
He went through the, how many stages of?
Seven? Five?
Whatever it is. Because we've mm-hmm. never had somebody confess murder to us, so mm-mm. we don't know really.
Yeah, you don't really know how you'd react if somebody confessed murder to you, especially your wife.
He was confused and
so I can kind of see
angry
his side of it. Not, you know, not the shooting up the drugs in the hotel room for months, but, you know.
Never done heroin. Not sure about that.
So, not long after this, they both ended up relapsing and using drugs again. They were shooting up heroin, using cocaine, right?
$500 worth of cocaine and heroin.
A day. So this is where Christine's inheritance was going. It was going to $500 worth of heroin and cocaine a day. So they ended up in a hotel in San Antonio, kind of shacked themselves in there. They literally never left the
room. La Quinta.
Yeah, the La Quinta Inn in a motel in San Antonio.
Right.
So with the help of a Crime Stoppers tip, from a guy that she was actually in rehab with, had confessed to him.
Different guy, not her husband.
Nope, not
different
her husband. Guy. Just telling all the guys, all her business.
Just everybody's.
Everybody gets to know.
You get to know the murder.
You
get to
know
the
pretty
murder.
Much.
Like Oprah, you know, just so, giving away the murders.
Don't. I have a whole nother thing about that. So
uh-oh, okay. Well, we'll go.
Oprah's and giving stuff
we're,
away.
We're done. Sorry, Oprah.
But anyway.
You know.
So,
hey, yeah.
She literally never left. The cops got there on July 19th, 2006. Her and Justin were both arrested. The cops or detectives said that the room stunk of garbage, feces, and body odor. It was said that even one of the detectives stepped in feces.
Well, and some of the feces was actually dog fecal matter because they had their dog there living in
a hotel room.
Squatter with them, where they literally were injecting it. Well, we read
every 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's another thing. They had their dog in there. The drug paraphernalia was everywhere, along with bags of dope, empty and full.
Over hundreds of needles.
Hundreds of needles.
Hundreds of used needles. 7 months worth, to be exact.
And we're going to put a picture of that on our Instagram and in our Facebook group so you can kind of see what we're talking about. It was disgusting. There were huge amounts of blood splattered literally everywhere. The walls, the rug, the sheets. In Christine's nightshirt that she was wearing whenever they arrested her, there was blood literally all over it. Once they arrived at San Antonio Police Department headquarters, Justin Rott told them everything Christine told him about the murders. Like, he literally was just singing like a canary.
Rolled over immediately. Yeah,
because he was like, I know what this is about.
But I'm assuming they both needed a fix.
Yeah.
They were at that point where they've been shooting every 15 minutes.
He was probably relieved, to be honest. He was
probably ready to get it off his chest and probably needed another dosage.
Yeah, so he was just telling all her business. But at the same time, I don't blame him because, like, well, I said, right. He didn't know what to do. That's his wife. But
then again, he did protect her for seven months.
Yeah.
She told him originally, uh-huh. And he's like, you know what? We'll go live in La Quinta for
and do drugs all day.
And do drugs all day on your daddy's money. Your daddy's dead money.
Yeah.
You know?
So whenever they got to the headquarters, they, you know, Justin Rott was talking, telling them. And then whenever Detective Harris, who was the newer detective on the case, whenever the previous detectives had retired, is when Detective Harris kind of came into play and picked up. And so he was the one who was interrogating Christine. And before the actual interrogation, he had talked to Christine about, like, the difference between justice and mercy and all the other deep things to kind of, like, gain her trust and get her to feel comfortable with him in hopes that it'll help in the actual interrogation. But in the actual interrogation, he asked her if she thought that she deserved justice or mercy. And she said mercy. She then said that Chris Snyder deserved justice. And she acted very terrified of him. She acted like, you know, if she said a word that he was just going to come hurt her and her family. And so her initial story implicated Chris and extricated herself. She never even went into the house. She didn't know exactly what happened. She, you know, that had nothing to do with her. She was just outside and kept the secret. That's all.
But then detox started happening. Yeah. Started detoxing.
Yes. And she did say their plan was to go and steal drugs from Marcus and Tiffany. That's what she did say that their intentions were. And then she claimed that, like I said, she never went into the house. Eventually, after trips to the hospital to deal with her detoxing, they were able to fly her back to Houston. At this point, she was spiraling downhill. Like, there was nothing. Like, they were giving her abnormal amount of dosages of that, what is it, methadone that they used?
Right. At that time, yes.
At that time, more than a normal person should ever even get, but they had to.
But let's remember, every 15 minutes.
Every 15 minutes.
Of heroin. And she was not a big girl. She was a little girl.
Yeah, she was tiny.
How old? 20 at this
22.
Age? 22.
Uh-huh.
And she was still tiny.
Yeah, they had reached what they could do for her. She was spiraling out of control, coming down.
It was still not enough.
And after hours of interrogation, she finally confessed that she was also a part of it. She did confess.
But did she really confess? Because it was like,
she kind of was.
He put the gun in my hand. It accidentally went off because I was nervous. And,
yeah.
You know, that whole spiel.
So she didn't actually tell them her whole part in the murders. But I do know that she told them that she is the one who hit Rachel Coloradus with the gun because she was still alive.
Right. She was worried, you know, if this girl stays alive, I'm going to prison forever.
So she definitely had a part in that. I think it was Chris who beat Marcus. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
So she did, in her own way, confess.
On October 13, 2008, she was charged with four counts of capital murders.
Hey, what was she? She was what now? She was charged? Because you're kind of...
Leave me alone.
She's kind of
some issues.
Wiping her nose a little bit.
I got some allergy issues. and she's messing with me.
The date was
October 13, 2008.
There you go.
Charged with four counts of capital murders. Eligible for parole in my SpongeBob typing at 2046 at 60 years old. Ugh. And the only reason she escaped the death penalty is because she was 17 at the time of the crimes. So, unfortunately, in this case, justice was not fully served because Chris...
Not Chris.
No, Chris couldn't take the heat, ended up, you know, committing suicide in the woods.
Like, what kind of P word...
A P word who kills four people for drugs.
He killed four people for drugs. At 21? He was 21, right?
He was 21 years old.
He was 21. Mm-hmm. Rachel was 17.
Went about their...
Christine was
17. Christine was 17. And they went about their business. So,
like, and you can't stand trial for that?
Nope. Of course not. He ran for years.
What a P word.
But he, yeah, justice, in my opinion, justice was not fully served in this case because Christopher Snyder, you know, he took... I hate to say this about suicide, but in this case, it was the easy way out because he knew he was going to jail for his crimes. It wasn't suicide because he was ill.
Or sad or being bullied.
He couldn't take the heat.
Mentally ill. Like, it was literally something that he had done that was wrong.
And he couldn't.
He knew it, and he couldn't stand trial for it. So, like, P word. P word.
Definitely.
Just found out today my mother-in-law's listening, so I'm not using the real P word.
Uh-oh.
There's that.
I've done said all kinds of P words, probably.
Okay. She doesn't know you.
Sorry, Brad's mom. So that
Hey, shout out to Terry.
Share with your friends. So that is episode one, Christine Palalila.
Is serving. Not enough time. She
definitely
should,
not.
She should die.
So we are going to put up some pictures of her mugshot, some pictures of the... you know, needles and stuff found in the room and some other things. So make sure you check out our Instagram, Taste of True Crime Podcast, and make sure you follow us on Facebook, Taste of True Crime Podcast. Until next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.